ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं हरे कृष्ण. सो आई वुड लाइक टू वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू, many devotees and many guests who have come this evening to our monthly festival for the youth, which is called Prerna, or a festival of inspiration. Today's topic is be conscious of your consciousness. Now, before I begin my presentation, I would like to do a small exercise, and I need four very strong, healthy, young, intelligent volunteers. Somebody would like to come forward? I need four. Yes, thank you. That's one, two, three, and four. Yes. And I invite you to come and sit here with me on the Vyasasan here. It's a very esteemed place, and kindly be seated. One, two, please leave enough place for the other one. four are enough, yeah. Thank you very much. Probably next time. thank you very much. So please, all of you, hold your breath and watch very carefully. We're going to have a very special exercise with our intelligent, smart, young friends. Now, all of you will be given a particular kind of fit, outfit. You will have to please wear it. Where should we start? We'll start with the tough one. Kindly wear this. This is for the second one. You played cricket? Good, then I think you'll be more comfortable with it. Much at home. Are you a surgeon, by the way? Are you a surgeon? You're taking medical?
No, engineering.
Oh, good enough. You will practice for that. And you can do freehand. So, is everyone ready? No, one second. The latex gloves take little time. Fully fit? It's comfortable? Okay. Yes, ready? You can fit in properly. Can I help you? Fully in? Okay. Now, I will be giving you, in front of you, keeping a box. And after the box is kept, I'll give further instructions. Two more. Okay. So now, please keep it at equidistant.
Yeah.
All right. So kindly hear to the instruction. I will give you 2.5 minutes. As I ring this bell, you should not lift the box, you should not move the box, and each of the box contain a needle and a thread. Now, as soon as I ring the bell, you have 2.5 minutes without moving the box, without lifting the box, you have to pick up the needle and thread, and thread the put the thread through the eye of the needle. All right? Your time starts. Hey, you're not supposed to be with anything else. You're supposed to be only using what has been given to you. Yeah. You still have 30 seconds. Don't be disappointed. All right. Thank you very much. But before you... you did it?
Yeah.
You? What about you? Yes. What about you? And what about... had I asked him to punch, I think he would have been the first one. He would have been the most successful one. Can we have a mic? Can you share your experience, the last one? What did you feel? Pardon? You can speak directly. What did you feel? He said he feeling helpless. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Now you can sit back. Please remove it. Thank you. You can go back. Thank you so much for your wonderful endeavor. I would like somebody from the audience to give a feedback in relationship with the topic. What can we learn? You saw there were four people, one with boxing gloves, one with wicketkeeper's gloves, one with the latex gloves of a surgeon, and one without gloves. And all were asked to thread the needle. And we saw in reverse order, one was able to do it very quickly. The other took a little time with latex gloves. And the wicketkeeper tried his best. And our boxing friend felt very much helpless. That is his own word. So anyone would like to share, I would like to take 3-4. What do you... with relationship with the topic that we have today, what do you understand by this exercise? What can you conclude? Or what can you derive? Somebody would like, yeah? Can we pass the mic? Is it on? Yeah. Yes, Prabhu, your name?
Dipanshu.
Dipanshu. What do you do?
I'm an engineering student.
Engineering student, yes, please. Yeah, it's on. You can speak.
I think that, this means that the more the material covering on our consciousness, the more it is difficult for us to take to devotional service.
Wow, that is the conclusion of today's lecture. Thank you very much. Mahaprasade Govinde. So Prabhuji, he says that the more the covering, the more difficult to take up to devotional service. Thank you. Anyone else would like to share? Yes, Prabhu. 1, 2, 3, 4. Two more people. Yeah. We'll pass Prabhuji. The mic. 1 minute.
I think, Prabhuji, you have given them one goal, and that goal was to put a thread in the eye of needle. Similarly, we have to reach to our destination. Till we are not free from material bondages, they are having some material things on the hand, and the one who was not having anything, material thing, he achieved his goal. So we have to achieve our goal, we have to leave this material thing. So we have to be conscious about that.
Thank you. So I hope all of you learned your lesson. Next time you should be sitting here. Yes, two more there. Yeah. Can you just tell your name? What are you doing?
Prabhuji, Hare Krishna. My name is Ravikant Bhavrao Jagtap. I am a visually challenged person. Uh-huh. And I am doing physiotherapy diploma.
So you heard what I said?
Yes, I heard.
All right. What is the conclusion can you derive?
The conclusion is that the consciousness level in each and every species is different. And in lower species, the consciousness is very low. And in human beings, the consciousness is highest. Because our consciousness is highest, so that we can do devotional service towards Lord Krishna easily.
Hare Krishna, Jai. Thank you. So visual handicap is no barrier as long as hearing is sharp. Thank you. Yes, one last feedback.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I am Pankaj Poddar. I am studying in 11th science. The conclusion I derived is that the more you are covered, the desire of a soul is to just serve the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. And the more it is covered by material nature, the more it is difficult. Just like the aim of the hand, the aim of our desire is just to thread the needle. Similarly, the desire of the soul is to just reach the lotus feet of Krishna. And the material nature is just binding us. We have to just cleanse our heart.
Jai, thank you. With a little difference, more or less, practically all of them said the same thing. But I would like to read from the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada writes a brilliant purport to one particular verse, which is close to the exercise that we saw. This is from chapter number 3, entitled Karma Yoga, text number 38. Dhumena avriyate vanhir yatha darshah malena cha yathulbena avrato garbhah tatha tena idam avratam. Translation: as fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, or as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. Purport: there are 3 degrees of covering of the living entity by which his pure consciousness is obscured. This covering is but lust under different manifestations, like smoke in the fire, dust on the mirror, and the womb about the embryo. When lust is compared to smoke, it is understood that the fire of the living spark can be a little perceived. In other words, when the living entity exhibits his Krishna consciousness slightly, he may be likened to the fire covered by smoke. Although fire is necessary where there is smoke, there is no overt manifestation of fire in the early stage. This stage is like one beginning of Krishna consciousness. The dust on the mirror refers to a cleaning process of the mirror of the mind by so many spiritual methods. The best process is to chant the holy name of the Lord. The embryo covered by the womb is an analogy, illustrating a helpless position. It's amazing. The conclusion of that devotee who had the boxing gloves. In one word, it's amazing how he brought out just the essence. This was not planned. He just came out and he sat here. Okay. The embryo covered by the womb is an analogy illustrating a helpless position. For the child in the womb is so helpless that he cannot even move. This stage of living condition can be compared to that of the trees. The trees are also living entities, but they have been put in such a condition of life by such a great exhibition of lust that they are almost void of all consciousness. The covered mirror is compared to the birds and the beasts, and the smoke-covered fire is compared to the human being. In the form of a human being, the living entity may revive a little Krishna consciousness. And if he makes further development, the fire of spiritual life can be kindled in the human form of life. By careful handling of the smoke in the fire, fire can be made to blaze. Therefore, the human form of life is a chance for the living entity to escape the entanglement of material existence. In the human form of life, one can conquer the enemy lust by cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. So, what we actually saw was an exhibition of the same fact that is mentioned by Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita in answer to the question of Arjun, Atha kena prayuktoyam papam charati purushah anichchannapi varshniya baladivanyojitah. Impelled by what, O Krishna, is a person forced to perform activities even against his will, as if pulled by force? And Krishna says, it is lust only, Arjuna, kama yesha krodha yesha rajoguna samudbhava. Raja, the mode of passion. Mahashano mahapapma vidyenam iha vairinam. That is the enemy which covers the consciousness. Dhumena avriyate vanhi. The first example is dhumena. Dhuma is smoke. Avriyate vanhi. Vanhi means fire. Fire covered by smoke. The second example is yatha adarshah. Adarshah means mirror. Malena cha. Covered by thick layer of dust. And yatha ulbena avrato garbha. Ulbena means the womb. As the child is covered by the womb. Tatha tena idam avratam. Idam means the soul is covered by different degrees of this enemy of lust. Now, any entity has a form and a function. Just like this kartal has a form, right? It has a particular form and it has a function. What is the function? To hit and to produce sound. But now, if that kartal is covered by a boxing gloves and if I try to beat the kartal, you can't even see the kartal, you can't use the kartal. The function and the form, both are not visible. The first thing is, the child within the womb, the embryo within the womb, the form of the child you don't know. Within the womb of the mother, you can't see the form, and the child is absolutely helpless. It can't function. So the form is also covered, and therefore the function is also not manifest. Second example is of the mirror covered by thick layer of dust. The form is visible. You can make out it's a mirror. But the function is not possible. You can't see the mirror because it is covered. And the third is smoke covered by fire. There, the fire can be seen. The form of fire is visible. And function of the fire is also to a large extent seen. Because it is very less covered. Similarly, every living entity, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed the Srila Rupa Goswami in the science of the flowering of consciousness. How there are, can we show that? He explained, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that how the living entities, the living beings can be divided broadly into two categories. The eternally liberated souls who have absolutely no material covering, who are eternally residing in the spiritual world. And they are of two categories. They are Nitya Mukta and Baddha Mukta. Nitya Mukta are those eternal associates of the Lord who are always residing with the Lord, who never turn their face away from the Lord. And therefore, they are full of eternity, knowledge and bliss. Sat, they have a body which is made of spirit, absolutely spiritual. Chit, full of knowledge. And Ananda, bliss. Who never fall into this material realm. They may come along with the Lord, Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, the gopis, the gopas, the intimate associates, eternal associates of the Lord. They may come into the material realm only to assist the Lord in his pastime, and along with the Lord they will go back. Even though they are in the world like a lotus leaf, they are absolutely untouched by the material contamination. The covering of consciousness is not there. The pure activity, consciousness of the soul, of love of God, is fully manifest there. And then there are Baddha Mukta. Baddha Mukta means those who have come to the material world in forgetfulness of the Lord. And then after purifying their existence and reviving their natural innate position, they have perfected their lives and gone back. And therefore, they never come into this world again. And they can remain in any situation and continue to serve the Lord. So they are perfected souls. That is one category. But then there are eternally conditioned. Now why are they called eternally conditioned? Because even before they came into this material existence, their conditioning had started. Just like before going into the prison house, you must do some activity which forces you to go into the prison house. And when you enter the prison house, time starts. But your activity started even before you enter the prison house. So when the desire is there to enjoy separately from the Lord, then the living entity comes into this material existence. And then he's covered over, time starts clicking in a way that it ultimately takes away everything. So there, the beginning is even before they came, and of course they can end the karma. And they are divided into two categories. There are of course 84 lakh species. We all hear that. I remember the first time I heard 84 lakh. I was wondering what exactly is the 84 lakh, exactly what does it mean? The 84 lakh species of life are not 84 kinds of species, but they are 84 levels, 84 lakhs of different levels of consciousness, subtle degrees of covering. Just like we were broadly discussing, three degrees here. But even amongst them, there are different levels of covering. So amongst them, there are two, sthavara and jangama. Sthavara means non-moving. Non-moving are 20 lakhs, which includes all kinds of plants and trees and whatnot. even some kinds of rocks, living rocks. They are non-moving. They are situated at one place, as it is described. It's just like a hand. The hand is the same. The hand is the same in all the people here. But only which kind of gloves they have put themselves in. So the soul, which is living in the plant life, plant body, is so covered, it just can't move. And as rightly described by that devotee, helpless condition. Just standing there. Padapa. They drink from their feet and they just stand there. Life after, year after year. Very helpless condition. It is described there are 20 lakh species of that. And the moving ones are 64 lakhs. And amongst those, there are three kinds. Moving in air, there are 40 lakhs. And then there are Krimayo Rudra Sankhyayam. Moving in water, Jalaja, Navalakshan, 9 lakhs. That's not 40 lakhs. No. I think this calculation is wrong here. In water is 9 lakhs. Jalaja, Navalakshani. Moving in water, 9 lakh different kinds of species. Krimayo Rudra Sankhyayam, the insects, etc., reptiles, Rudra Sankhyayam, that means 11 lakhs. And Pakshinam Dashalakshavaha, that is air, in air, that is 10 lakhs. And Chaturlakshani Manava, 4 lakh species of human beings on land. So 30 lakh species of animals and 4 lakh species of human beings. Amongst those 4 lakhs, yeah, can you go down further? So on land, just 1 minute. So on land, looks like the devotee who made this is very fond of the number 40. So in water is 9, in air is 10, and on land is whatever, 34 or whatever. And then human being is 4 lakhs, and insects and animals, 30 and 11 lakhs, 31 and 4, that is 84 lakhs. Now amongst human beings, this is amongst human beings, the human being is the most manifest. The form and the function of the soul is maximally manifest within the human being. Therefore, sometimes even the Bible says, man is made in the image of God. Because it's almost very close to the perfection of the manifestation of the soul. Next. So now let's take the human beings, which are 4 lakhs. The 4 lakh doesn't mean, according to Darwin, you know, all quadruped one and all biped one. Not like that. Darwin says that the evolution of species is the species evolved. Man came from monkeys. But then Vedic evolution says no. All the 84 lakh eternally exist. They are always there. Sometimes manifest, sometimes not manifest. But these, because there are different levels of consciousness, separate desire to enjoy separately from the Lord. And therefore, to enjoy in a particular way, you have to have a suitable body to facilitate that enjoyment. If you want to punch someone, you can't beat with these hands. You will get hurt. Right? I remember one time, one of our few workers here caught a thief who was stealing slippers. So he got very excited. And this fellow beat him up very much strong so that he won't come again. And after that, the whole night he was applying oil. Main kyun mara pata nahi, itna dard ho raha hai. At that time he was so excited, he beat him up. The whole night he was applying coconut oil and all that, massaging. But if you have the proper gloves, then you can do that. But with that, you can't do many other things. subtle things. The more subtle, the more it requires the manifestation of its subtle things should be much more manifest. With grosser covering, you can do grosser things much better. But for doing the subtler aspects of self-realization, that requires a different levels. So, amongst these 4 lakh species, they can be broadly divided into 5 categories. One is called, we will discuss that, it's compared to a flower. Just like in a plant, before flowering, just a green bud manifests, right? Where the flower is about to come, a green bud manifests. And then the bud becomes much more big, full covered, and still the flower has not yet manifested fully. It's still within that green, what are they called? Sepals? No. No, petals are the flowers. But the calyx, right? Some biology student here. Yeah, the green ones which support the flower, which initially cover the petals. I forgot my biology lessons long back, you see, many years. So the green covering like that. So that is called the contracted. First is covered, then is contracted, and then is budding. Budding means the flower has just come out, but the petals have not yet unfolded. That is the third stage, budding. And after budding, the petals start opening up. That is called developed. And then there is full blossom. So even the consciousness within the human beings can be compared to a flower at different stages of flowering of this consciousness. So there are 5 stages of development of consciousness. Yeah, can you go next one? The first one called Achhadita. Achhadita means completely covered. The consciousness is there because the soul is there, but it is not yet, it's not manifest, it's completely covered. So that is compared to the plants and the rocks. Very rare, sort of living rocks are there, which do grow, but their growth rate is many thousands of years it takes to grow 1 millimeter, whatever. So practically, for all purposes, they are like dead. But plants also, some plants are very slow to grow. You may not even see. But if you watch over a long period of time, then you can see there's some growth. Some plants may grow quick. So, the plants, these are covered. They're the soul is there. All the aspects of the soul within the human being is also there in them. But they are more covered over as the hand in a boxing gloves, as it is expressed. Very helpless. You can't give a Gita course to the plants and expect them to start chanting Hare Krishna. Okay. The next one is contracted or Sankuchita. Sankuchita means it's contracted like this. It's not yet even budded. And the examples are those of animals, birds and reptiles. They have consciousness, but it is more, it's amazing. Even amongst all these reptiles, there is a particular verse in the Bhagavatam where Lord Kapila tells Mother Devahuti, different levels of advancement of consciousness. I would like to just read it for your information. Living entities are superior to inanimate objects, O Blessed Mother, and among the living entities, those who display life symptoms are better. Animals with developed consciousness are better than them, and better still are those who have developed sense perception. They may have consciousness, but they don't have senses like we have the senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the sense of touch, etc. Amongst the living entities who have developed sense perception, those who have developed sense of taste are better than who have developed that sense of touch. So the first thing that develops is the sense of touch. Just like the amoeba, they have a sense of touch. You touch them and they retract. You know, the sense of touch is there. Higher than that is a sense of taste. If they can develop a sense of taste, some there are insects, they have taste, a sense of taste. Just like the flies, they have a particular taste. They go and land there. They don't go on they have their very selective taste. Better than them are those who have developed the sense of smell. So there are some amongst the living entities who have developed the sense of smell in addition with the previous ones. And better still are those who have developed the sense of hearing. If you have that sense of hearing also, that's higher. Better than those are living entities who have perceived sound are those who can distinguish between one form and another. For some it is like black and white television. Some animals just see shadow and light, shadow and light. That's all. They can't see. The flies can't see like you and me. They may have very compound big eyes. But if you transfer yourself into their body and see through their eyes, world is totally different. Sometimes you wonder, you know, why can't they see the way we see? If you put a color television and a black and white, for them it's the same. They can't perceive color. They can just perceive. So there are different levels of perception. In this way, even amongst the living entities, there is a subtle development, higher and higher and higher. Manifestation. It's the same soul everywhere, but the manifestation is becoming more and more and more complicated, intricate, and more developed. Better than them are those who have developed upper and lower sets of teeth. You are so fortunate we have all of them. And better still are those who have many legs. Better than them are the quadrupeds. And better still are the human beings. Amongst the human beings, the society that is divided according to quality and work is best. And it goes on. Further division. So, even amongst them, there are different levels. Animals, birds and reptiles. Next. Then comes the budding. The budding consciousness where the flower is actually visible, which has come out of that green calyx and it's actually visible. That is called mukulita. Mukulita means where it is actually manifest. Just like the hand in a latex glove. Where the form of the hand and the activities, the function of the hand is much more dexterous. You can actually, that's why he was able to put next. Right, other than the person with a free hand, the second person who was able to do it was the person with the latex gloves. So, next. Yeah. Now, human beings. Now, amongst human beings, there are different levels of consciousness. And when we hear that, we can understand where we are. Of course, the moment we have got a human life, as Prabhupada writes in the purport there, human life means the consciousness is not covered and it is not even contracted. At least it is a budding stage where the activity of the soul, because of the presence of senses, the mind and the intelligence, it is much more manifest. Much more manifest. So amongst the budding stage, the human beings, because they have a logical mind, we have senses. Through senses, we acquire the information, gather the information, sort the information, analyze the information, divide the information, divide it into, you know, categories, and then retrieve it when we want and use them for advancement. We use it for advancement also. Technologically, we have improved so much. So, amongst the human beings, the lowest level is amoral atheist. They are like the primitive people. You can call the mlechas, the shabaras, the primitive kind of people. who probably lives in a jungle, their consciousness is, there is, it's almost like animal. Animalistic. How to eat and sleep and mate and defend. That's all. Slightly little more. And they may have some kind of respect to God or something, you know, something higher power, shining objects like the sun, the mountain, the forest, anything that is higher. Their dependence is there. A sense of worshipping the higher power is there. Bowing down to the higher power. Taking their blessings and expressing their dependence. That's there. But there is no question of, it's more a thing of might is right. It's like in the jungle, you know. Whoever is powerful gets their way. So, there's no sense of morality, etc. And there is no understanding of God, exactly what is God, etc. So, it is amoral and atheistic level. That's one level of consciousness. And even there, amongst them, some of them can be more civilized. Civilized in terms of sophistication. That's all. But their goal of life is how to eat, sleep, mate, and defend. These are the four functions of every living entity. How to eat, how to sleep, how to mate, and how to defend. These are natural biological instincts of survival. You have to eat, you have to sleep to rejuvenate and replenish your energy. You have to mate, procreation, and defend yourself against enemy, all kinds of enemies, all kinds of unfavorable environment. It's a natural function. Even insects do it. Even birds do it. Even plants have, to some extent, this kind of thing. So this is there, but it's only done in a very sophisticated way. We may be very technologically advanced. So someone comes forward and says, what kind of uncivilized life you are living? Why don't you leave that? And let's enjoy life. And the conception is more like, what is their overall consciousness? We are talking about consciousness. Now here, please don't think that a person of a lower consciousness, a human being of a lower consciousness, has a big head because it is covered by a thick layer. No. Sometimes you say, kya dimag hai, bhuse ka bana hua. Thick-headed, you know, thick-skinned fellow, we say. What it actually means is the level of consciousness. So in human beings, it's not that you're going to see different levels and, you know, different thickness of the skin or the brain substance. Instead of 450 grams, he has 850 grams. It's not like that. It's the same. But only thing is, how much is the subtle covering? Subtler things are known by symptoms. Gross things can be measured, can be seen, can be, you know, physically judged. But subtler the thing, you can know only by symptom. How can you know the mind? You can't measure the mind. You can't weigh the mind. Face is the index of the mind, they say. If somebody is very disturbed, they say, you look like your mind is very disturbed. Right? How do you know intelligence? If I tell something and someone understands quickly, you say, oh, sharp. And if I say 10 times and still doesn't understand, thoda kam hai. So intelligence is known by IQ. In fact, the International Association of Mental Handicap or Mentally Challenged, as they say, defines intelligence as the how quickly can you adapt yourself to a new environment, to the subtleties, finer nuances, social differences. If I go to a new environment, grossly I can express myself. But the subtle aspects of that society, subtle nuances of their language, the puns, the jokes, we may not be able to appreciate. But if you are smart, we quickly come to know. But someone who is dull cannot understand these things. Therefore, his intelligence is supposed to be less. The IQ. So, the subtler the things, you can't see them. But the thick, the covering is very, very subtle. And therefore, by their philosophy, you can understand what is their goal of life, what is the means to achieve it, and what are their activities based on the level of... Because whatever is your level of consciousness, your activity will be based on that. Therefore, what is their philosophy? Who are amoral, atheistic. What literally animal. Animal society of no moral codes. If you throw a meat in front of 10 dogs, they won't stand in a queue. Now I came first, you know. Please stand before. Yeah, might is right. Because you see it in local trains also. Okay. That's what is happening, unfortunately. So, there is no sense of morality there. There is no sense of what is right, what is wrong. Might is right. Bas. So, amoral atheist. What is their philosophy? Their philosophy is the universe is a combination of and separation of atoms. That's all. It's simply atomic particles coming together and separating. There is no creator. There is no soul. Faith in God is simply superstitious. Sounds very common, right? Intelligence arises by working of material brain in material body. Material body, you have keep on working and then you develop intelligence. That's all. And body dies, existence ends and merges into the primal matter. This is their philosophy. So, but don't do anything that gives future trouble in this life. This life is everything. And don't do anything which gives you future trouble. And what is that future trouble? Don't do anything which will imprison you. Put you in the you know, prison house. Otherwise you will suffer. I don't want suffering. I don't want execution. I don't want sickness. I don't want infamy. And the excellence of humanity is its sophistication. How sophisticatedly I eat. The aborigine tribal person may eat with hands and tear away the muscle, but I cook it nicely and have a fork and spoon. So how sophisticated you are, how civilized you are, is judged by how sophisticated in terms of sense gratification is going on. That's all. One time I went to a tailor shop and he had written, God makes man, tailor makes him gentleman. So, this is what a gentleman. So gentleman is detected not by his sophistication in terms of character, in terms of morality, in terms of theism, but in terms of how, you know, polished, how nicely he does things and how dexterously he handles things. So, and if there is a conflict between general happiness of society and individual happiness, then throw away general happiness to individual happiness. Give priority to individual happiness. I want what I want when I want. Anyone can give me, they are my friend. Those who refuse, they are my worst of enemies. And I am going to destroy them. That is demoniac mentality. That is very, very selfish, grossly materialistic, immoral. They have some kind of their own morality. But they have, you know, like Hiranyakashipu. Self-centered. I am God. There is no other God. I am the center of the whole universe. So this consciousness. And that was... it is not nothing new. It has been existing since time immemorial. Since there are 84 lakh species of life and 4 lakh species of human beings, all the philosophies are always existing. Nothing is new. Only thing is, whichever groups are more, that philosophy sometimes predominates. That's all. If you create a suitable environment, a suitable kind of people will come. If you have a bar nearby, a particular kind of consciousness of people will come there. If you have a temple, particular kind of consciousness of people will come there. Environment attracts. just behind our temple there was a dump yard of all the building would dump so many things there, and always there were crows there. It was a place of pilgrimage for the crows. And for 13 years I had never seen anything else other than crows in this compound. But then, as soon as we converted into a beautiful garden, surprisingly, the crows come, but like Lakshman Rekha, they don't enter the garden. There's a subtle, you know, covering there. And you find butterflies I had never seen in Bombay. Butterflies, parrots, beautiful cuckoo birds, and what kind of some one special bird with long tail which whistles. First time. First time I thought somebody is whistling just to attract the birds. But I actually saw this bird was actually this beautiful bird which had never come for so many years. So the kind of consciousness, the whole society predominates by the mode of passion, ignorance. A particular consciousness develops in people unless we take great precaution through our activities, through our mindset, through our immediate surroundings, through our food. Everything governs, subtly or grossly, the kind of consciousness we can develop. Unless we make an endeavor, we get sucked into the kind of consciousness of the environment. So this is prevalent. So this was even there much before Charvak Muni said this. Ridam kritva ghritam pivet yavat jivet sukham jivet. Ridam kritva. Ridam means beg, borrow or steal. But ghritam pivet. Eat only in ghee. Of course he was a Vedic fellow. So he said eat only ghee. Beg, borrow or steal. But live life king size. This is their philosophy. So, Rinam Krutva Ghritam Pivet. Yavat Jivet Sukham Jivet. And as long as you live, enjoy life. Get the best. Get the best. Squeeze out as much of superficial, sensual happiness that you can. Somebody will say, nay, 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 what about sinful reactions? What about suffering in the future? Ha! Bhasmi Bhutasya Dehasya. It is simply, ultimately, the whole body will reduce to a fist of ashes. Punaragamanam kutaha. Where is the question of life after death? It's all bogus. So this is nothing new. This was existing before. It's a question of what kind of consciousness we are naturally attracted to a particular kind of philosophy. Then, of course, there were some Western philosophers. There was a Greek philosopher. He was a king. Attached to luxurious living. He also had a similar thing. Then comes the next level of consciousness of the budding quality, that is moral atheist. So the immoral atheist simply wants to selfishly enjoy life at any cost, even at the cost of suffering to others. But the second level of person comes and says amongst them, because the nature of human life is you are not satisfied till you advance to your natural constitutional position. An intelligent man is dissatisfied. He cannot be happy till he, just like a fish out of water, unless situated in its natural constitutional position, there will be some kind of deep dissatisfaction. I'm getting all that I want, but still there is something lacking, which is a blessing provided by nature to push us till perfection. So the next level, some person says, come on, my dear friends, what are you doing? He says, give up selfishness. Accept individual suffering where it will give happiness to society. Little selflessness. You extend yourself to society. Rules that can increase the happiness of human beings in general society is called morality. Now, what is morality? Morality means, I'll give you a very, very simple example. An immoral atheist wants to keep his house clean. So he will clean up the house, look around, nobody is there, throw the whole dust in the neighbor's compound. But then the neighbor may come and say, "Aisa mat karo yaar." Or next day you may find he has thrown in your compound. Then the whole society gets together. Because they know, if I continue to do that, and if he continues to do that, it's going to cause me pain. It's happiness when you throw in others' compound, but it is displeasing when somebody throws it in your compound. Therefore, they come together and say, from today onwards, this is a selected place where everyone will throw outside. That let the city people think about where to dispose. But we will get throw out in a particular place. This is called, and anyone who follows that is considered a very moral person. So, what is pleasing to the body and what is displeasing to the body? What is beneficial to the beneficial to me, my mind and my senses, and what is not beneficial for the body? Keeping that in consideration and using logic, God-given logic, we manufacture a system in a particular society. This is called morality. So, morality is there. And sometimes people follow them very nicely. And they say, "I'm a very moral person." But why is it considered just a budding and very, very low level of consciousness? Because morality is not based on absolute truth. It is something whimsical. It is just temporary. 10 people may come together and decide something. That doesn't become truth. Like, for example, what was moral, what was considered immoral 50 years ago or 10 years ago is considered moral today in today's society. In fact, in trains, I see this, you know. Garbhapat, 90 rupees mein. 90 rupees, you go to the center and get it done. It's perfectly considered moral. If you have any problem, theek hai. Pro-life. And this is how they translate MTP, you know, medical termination of pregnancy or tissue removal. They give it a very, very innocent name and get it done with. Because I don't like it. As long as I don't trouble others, how does it concern you? And therefore, they are a very moral person. So, morality may change from place to place. You may drive to the left side of the road and you are considered very moral. But driving on the left side of the road is not the absolute truth. In America, they drive to the right side. They are considered, then you will be considered immoral if you drive on that side. It's all very, very superficial. And it changes from place to place and time to time. So simply living a moral life, but without solid, universal standard. There are some universal standards. And that standard is set by the Creator Himself. And therefore, as long as you don't accept a creator and his laws and base your morality on those instructions, then that is simply superficial. That is simply for your convenience. Tomorrow I don't like it, get this old man out. That's all, he's become too old, he's coughing all around, he's an embarrassment to the house. Just put him in an old man home somewhere, that's all, old age home. And I'm considered perfectly moral, I pay. And it can go to the extreme degrees of sinful activities, what to speak of any other immoral, but even sinful activities, and you can all justify wholesale. Today they are passing off bills in the government, whimsically, without no standard. There are universal standards. Truth is appreciated universally everywhere. Integrity is appreciated universally everywhere. Compassion is appreciated universally everywhere. Why? Because these are universal truths. When morality is based on truths, universal truths, that is actually standard morality. That is spirituality. But that cannot happen if you don't accept the Creator who has made laws and you have to live according to that law. Therefore, Krishna, Sanjaya told, यत्र योगेश्वर कृष्णो यत्र पार्थो धनुधर तत्र श्री विजयो भूतिर ध्रुवा नीतिर मतिर मम. दैट इज नीति. आई विल गिव यू वन लिटिल एग्जाम्पल ऑफ हाउ आई नो ए पर्सन. दिस मैन वेरी मॉरल, वेरी यू नो वेरी रिफाइंड थरो जेंटलमैन. एंड ही सेड ही वुड रेगुलरली ड्रिंक ए यू नो ए पेग ऑफ whiskey every night, and he says, I drink only one peg just before going to bed and I go to sleep. I don't give trouble to anyone. And I'm buying it out of my own hard earned money. Khoon pasina ek kiya humne, wo mere paise se kharida hu, kisi paise se peeta nahi, peeta hu, sota hu bas. What's wrong? It's my money, I do what I want. I had illicit sex. She agreed, Baba. She agreed. I didn't do it without any disapproval of hers or anything. She agreed, I agreed, my neighbor. So what? What's the problem? The husband is happy, he's not complaining. What's your problem? I am a very moral person. It can go to extreme degree of morality, in the name of morality. You can be a moral person, and in the eyes of the Lord, you can be a most degraded person. Consciousness will continue to be like that. Because anything that pleases you today, you will justify and create a philosophy around it. I remember when I was in 8th standard, I saw a beautiful cartoon. I would like to describe that. This cartoon showed two boys with bows and arrows shooting on the wall at a bullseye. And it showed the first boy shooting an arrow, and it goes, there's a huge bullseye with 7 circles. So sometimes he hits the 7th circle, sometimes he hits the 4th one, sometimes he hits the 2nd one, sometimes he hits the 6th one, hardly able to hit the bullseye. He's trying his best. And the other fellow, every arrow, to the point, bullseye, bullseye, bullseye. So you may wonder, how is it this guy trying every poor fellow and hardly able to hit the bullseye? The second one is always hitting the bullseye. And then in the next cartoon, they show how he's able to do it. What he does is, he shoots an arrow where it hits the wall, he draws the bullseye. This is morality. So... first of all, I do an activity what I like, and then I create a whole philosophy around it. The center of the philosophy is my activity, and therefore I am the most moral person. So one yogi, powerful yogi, he was controlling his senses, and he was challenging openly that nobody can cause me to fall down. And one lady takes up the challenge, and he has an affair with her. And he has an illicit relation with her. And next day he creates a philosophy, Sambhog se Samadhi. And he is the topmost moralist person because he follows his philosophy perfectly. He is an acharya. Why? Acharati, whatever I say, I follow. Perfectly. But that's not an acharya. An acharya represents the scriptures. He speaks what is confirmed by Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, not whimsically. Therefore, simply morality without God in the picture, atheistic morality, is absolutely useless from the development of purification of consciousness point of view. And it's useless because it keeps on changing. And you think you are already perfect. You don't need to perfect anymore. And therefore, that kind of moral atheist is also a budding consciousness. And potentially, if he doesn't grow up to have a standard morality based on absolute truth of the Creator, then it is useless. Next, is moral pseudo-theist. there are so many so-called religious organizations who say that they believe in God and they are following some very high-level moral codes, yet ask them who God is and what exactly are the laws of God, they are bewildered. They are not able to point out and tell you exactly who God is, the definition of God. And so they think this is God, that is God, so many things are God. But actually, and they have their own religious codes written by somebody, their founder, and they may follow that. They're strictly following. But because there is no understanding of perfect scientific understanding of God, and therefore such a person is also, what is their philosophy? Why do they believe in God? Because they say a belief in fictitious or imaginary or concocted God is also a principal moral duty. They say one of the moral duty is following God. So therefore their following of God is subordinate to their morality principle. One of the moral principles is to worship God, that's all. You should do a little puja, because that's also one of the moral things. That's all. Why? Because even great moralists, sometimes when their senses are agitated, or when they are in seclusion, when nobody is watching, there is a tendency that they may fall down from their level of morality if there is no belief in God. My friend used to say, morality is lack of opportunity. You know? When we were together in class, he would say, garv se kaho hum bharatiya hain, Indian, be Indian, buy Indian, everything. Till he got his visa. And then suddenly changed his philosophy. Then I said, "Arey, main socha yaar, tu to Bharati hai, tu America ja raha hai. Come on, I now believe in humanity at large." So, sometimes they have their own codes, but when they see that it is not convenient, then they can change. So, morality will become more tangible and more fixed up if there is a belief, even in an imaginary God, there is some fear. Just a moral person, plain moral person, and a person who believes in, say, maybe some demigod, maybe some imaginary God, maybe some kind of a conception of God. Just see, there is some conception of fear. No. Even though nobody is watching, he knows. The conception is good, but unfortunately, it's concocted or imaginary or not proper. But still, therefore, they say, believe in God. So it's better than a moralist, but it is a pseudo-theist, because actually theism begins when God is understood properly. Secondly, at least a person who believes in some understanding of God, some higher authority, at least is becomes peaceful in life and also peaceful at the time of death. And there is a greater tendency to perform pious acts if there is a belief in some higher power who's watching, who's taking control, on whom we are dependent. And secondly, also they say, if God really exists, better to have faith in him. By chance, if you realize he's there, suppose you acted whimsically, and baad mein marne ke baad pata chala ki he's there. Achha hai, abhi kuch kar lo na, be satisfy him also. Otherwise, it may prove very costly. And also, happiness derived from worship of God is much more than mere happiness or more purer in terms of. So I know many people, many of my close relatives also, who are following some conception, very much concocted, very much imaginary. Even though conception of God is there, they say Srishti Karta and, you know, the person who began. But his whole thing is based on bodily conception. We have to do to our relatives. We have to do our countrymen. The center is me. My family, my society, my country, my race. The beginning is me. Beginning is not God. So they are stuck somewhere in between like that. But a principle of God, an understanding of God, a belief in imaginary God also gives them some kind of stability in their morality and some kind of fear, which is good. But still, since there is no understanding, complete understanding of God, the complete unfoldment of the consciousness cannot occur. We will discuss why. And even if you believe in God, gradually a life of or afterlife, a conception of life after death also comes. And therefore, he is not disappointed by any major disaster in this life. Sometimes people say, ye sab karne ke baad bhi aisa kyun ho gaya, pura jeevan barbaad ho gaya mera. But if an understanding of afterlife is there, ठीक है ये जन्म में हो जाएगा बस अगले जन्म से अच्छा चलेगा. Some kind of a hope. So because of understanding of this kind of an imaginary, even a concocted God, is much better than, so a pseudo theist is slightly better than a moral atheist. And of course, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes, many, many Indian philosophers of Shat Darshan philosophy, like Jaimini and Patanjali, they also talk of meditation on God and things like that. But then it is, Jai Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. But Jaimini, Patanjali, etc., amongst the Sat Darshan, only Vyasadeva's Uttara Mimamsa gives a complete understanding of the science of God. And the others do kind of some lip service. There are some great Western philosophers who speak out straight away that we don't believe in God. It's all imaginary, concocted. But someone like Jaimini, etc., are more sophisticated. They're Vedic people, you see. So they're very sophisticated. They don't reveal their heart. But what they mean is basically this. Then comes the moral theist. Even before that, the impersonalist. What do the impersonalists say? Their intelligence is still impure and their mind is unsteady. And therefore, what they do is they stretch their intelligence beyond their limit. And when it kind of breaks, ultimately they say, they reduce their whole philosophy to some symbolism. And their whole philosophy is one of negation. Okay, God, if you say people have form in this world, therefore God has no form. If there is change in this world, God has no change. If there is qualities here, there are no qualities in God. If there are distinctions here, there is no distinction. So what comes about is a nirguna, nirakar, nirvishesh, sarvavyapi, brahma. One kind of impersonal oneness. That's all. That's the conception. And therefore, their philosophy is, there is no substance other than Brahman. Brahman is all in all. And it is without quality or without any energy. And actually there is no jiva. It's all illusion what we are seeing in front of us. You are illusion, I am an illusion. We are all Brahman. Ghatakash, patakash. Inside there is akash, outside there is akash. Once this body, just like inside a clay pot there is air, outside there is air. If you break the clay pot, both become one. Similarly, when they die, body dies after liberation, you become one and merge into nothingness. This is their conception. And liberation is the highest goal, that's all. But all these kind of things cannot, not being the real dharma or natural consciousness of the soul, the fulfillment of the unfoldment of soul, cannot make that person actually happy. And therefore, next. The next is called developed. Developed means Vikasita. That means now in Vikasita, gradually the petals are coming out. The first bud that comes out is Adav Shraddha, faith. Through logic, it is very difficult to understand the inconceivable nature of the Lord, how He is outside everything, inside everything, simultaneously present in His own abode. It's very difficult to understand. One can only begin by start to have faith. Adav Shraddha. So bhakti, beginning with Shraddha, is the beginning of unfoldment of the consciousness of flower. Flower of consciousness. And then, as gradually the hearing and chanting goes, then the petals of Nishtha, petals of Ruchi, the petals of Asakti. Nishtha means steadiness, Ruchi means taste, and Asakti means attachment, starts manifesting. And then, next. The real theistic life to sadhana bhakti. When it comes to actually sadhana bhakti, where we understand there is God, where we understand we are His part and parcel, and the relationship between us. There are three things. The world, which is made of matter, the consciousness, the soul, and God. And all the three have relationship. When the relationship between the Lord and the living entity, and the living entity and the matter, is perfectly understood, then the full blossoming of consciousness can take place. Next. And finally, the fully developed consciousness, and that is Purna Vikasita, and that is Bhava Bhakti, where spontaneous natural love of God manifests within the heart, concluding in Prema. Next. Now, understanding consciousness as the manifestation of the soul, we will try to discuss briefly, this concept of Swadharma. Dharma means the natural innate quality of any entity. Next. So the innate quality of an entity that cannot be separated from it, that is called dharma. For example, dharma of fire. Wherever you see fire, there has to be heat, it has to burn, and it has to illuminate. These are the natural vrittis or qualities of fire. You cannot have a full-fledged fire without these three. There has to be heat, there has to be light, and there has to be burning. Next. What are the three states of dharma? The first is dormant state. Just like you have matchbox. And you have a stick, matchstick, with some phosphorus on it. It's actually fire. But the fire is not yet manifest. That is called dormant state. The dharma is there. Fire is there. But it is dormant. And the next is evident. Evident means when you strike it, fire comes out, heat comes, light comes, and it starts burning. But then the third one is perverted. Perverted means sometimes you may see smoke coming, but not the fire, but everything is burning. Sometimes, you know, all dry leaves are gathered, and some fellows light the fire in such a way, by the end of the day, everything burns, turns to ashes. Only smoke is coming, but there is no full-fledged fire. If you have noticed sometimes, or dry, wet leaves are there, you light it and put some nice fuel. It's there, fire is there, smoke is there, but gradually everything burns. So if heat is there and light is not there, that is called perverted dharma of the fire. If amongst the three, two are there, one is not there. One is there, two is not there. That is called perverted manifestation of dharma. So, first is dormant state. Then is sometimes perverted state. But actually when it is fully manifest, that's called evident. Similarly, in the soul, when the soul, in case of the boxing glove, in case of wicketkeeper's glove, it is more dormant. But in human life, it's more evident, but perverted. Perverted because of covering of lust. So same love, love means sacrifice, love means selfless service, is perverted to manifest as selfish and egoistic exploitation rather than service attitude. What's in it for me? Even morality, in the name of morality, you have a halo around your head. But actually what it in it is how it is going to benefit me rather than what is pleasing to God. Because bhakti means, soul means naturally that's servant of God. It has to serve God and please God in the center. But in all the other perverted religion, self or benefit of the self is in the center. God is nowhere in the picture. So three things are necessary for full manifestation of dharma. What are the three things? The first is ashraya. Ashraya means the entity which in which the dharma resides. Like the matchstick is the ashraya of the dharma, of the fire. That is the ashraya. And then the dharma known by its quality, the dharma itself, the different qualities of fire. And then there is vishaya or object which nourishes the qualities. For example, when the fire comes in contact with a piece of dry piece of wood, then the fire blazes, as Prabhupada writes in the purport. It blazes when it comes in contact with proper vishaya. Similarly, the soul is the ashraya. The soul has three things, three energies. Sat, Chit, Ananda. Sat means Sandhini Shakti. That means a spiritual body. The soul in the spiritual world has a spiritual body which has all wonderful qualities, all spiritual qualities. And what is the dharma? The dharma is serving the Lord out of love. Preeti. Preeti or love is the natural constitutional position, dharma, of the soul in its liberated state. And its conditioned state right now, it is bhakti, trying to serve the Lord. And what is the ashraya, the vishaya? The vishaya is God. When pure love is there, when you love God, your true nature of love manifests fully, blossoms fully. But anything other than God, even a perverted God, what to speak of material object, when that same love is invested on material objects, then that same love, dharma, is perverted. That is desha bhakti, parivara bhakti, swa bhakti, indriya priti. All these are perverted places of placing the love. And that is actually concocted, or that is perverted. And such a thing, you cannot find satisfaction. But when that same love, the natural service attitude to serve, that is focused on the real object, vishaya, of the Lord, then it manifests fully. And purity of each leads to mutual progress. If your ashraya is pure, that means if you purify your soul, then your dharma becomes pure, sanatana dharma, and your ashraya, naturally you are attracted to God. The more you cleanse your heart, the more you are attracted to God. If God is focused first, then other things become purified. They are interconnected. Next. Yeah. The soul manifests completely when three energies combine, as I've already said. Yeah. Next. So in its conditioned state, right now we are conditioned by the three modes, as you all said. It's just like some of us have a boxing gloves. Some of us have the wicketkeeper's gloves. and some of us have latex gloves. Doesn't matter whichever glove we have, but ultimately we have to remove the gloves. Mode of ignorance, mode of passion, and mode of goodness. Even mode of goodness have to be removed. And then actually that becomes pure. So full manifestation is when the soul in its purest state. And how do we do that? Next. By cultivating Swadharma, the soul's Chit Swarupa, the spiritual identity, and its Swadharma, that is Preeti, completely attains a pure state. And I would like to conclude with the last and most important question. How can the consciousness be purified from any state we are? It doesn't matter whether we have boxing gloves on our head, covered by our consciousness, or do we have any other kind of covering. How to remove this covering? And it is described, it is only possible when we come in contact with a pure devotee of the Lord who is completely blossomed in his consciousness, who can manifest the Lord's mercy. That is the beginning. There are one way, gradually you can go. In one life, millions of lifetimes you spend in amoral atheist, then moral atheist, then anything like that. Bahunam janmanam ante. One thing is climbing the staircase. Another one is taking the elevator. Taking the elevator means taking shelter. Brahmanda brahmite kuna bhagyavana jeev Guru Krishna prasade paye bhaktilata beach. When we come in contact with the Lord or the Lord's intimate associate who have fully blossomed, their consciousness is fully purified. They are like descended from the world simply to deliver the fallen souls. It doesn't matter. Even if you have consciousness like a stone, like Ahalya was cursed to become a stone, but Lord Ramchandra touched his feet and she assumed her conscious, proper original consciousness. Nalakuvar and Manigriva were cursed by Narada to become trees. But when they came in contact with Krishna, they were delivered. Similarly, elephant, you know, elephant consciousness. There is a story about Rasikananda, a great devotee of the Lord. He was such a powerful yogi. There was a mad elephant who was running all around in the Nawab's kingdom. And the Nawab challenged, okay, you say you are a great Vaishnav. You try to tame this elephant. If you stop this. And he was destroying houses and pulling out trees. And Rasikananda, seeing the soul in the same soul in the heart of that elephant also, being part of God, stood there right in front. Everyone was shouting. People ran away. Rasikananda just stood there. And as the elephant came, he was roaring. But ultimately he just came and stood in front of Rasikananda, bowed down and just lifted his trunk and, you know, offered obeisances. And Rasikananda went directly to, this is an actual incident that happened, went to the right ear of the elephant and said, you are a soul part of Krishna. Why are you madly, you know, spoiling your life? And he actually chanted the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in the ear of the elephant. And he initiated the elephant. The elephant had tears in his eyes and it circumambulated his guru, Rasikananda, and he named him Gopal Das. He named his name. You know, Dikshanam was your Gopal Das. And the elephant actually became such an exalted devotee of the Lord. It started serving the devotees for the rest of its life. When His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj was giving the lecture on this, His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami Maharaj was sitting next to him. And after the whole story of Rasikananda, Jayadvaita Maharaj, in his very cryptic, comprehensive, sharp, you know, razor-like words, he said, and then there are the dancing white elephants. And he said, Rasikananda converted one mad elephant, but Srila Prabhupada transformed hundreds and thousands of such elephants, mad elephants, when he went to the West in 1966. And he said, he by his touch, he said, Jayadvaita Maharaj, out of his humility, said, at that time these hippies were crazy guys. Their consciousness was fully clouded by drugs, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, all kinds of nonsense. And Srila Prabhupada, a pure soul that he was, descending from the world to the spiritual world just to deliver, fearlessly walked alone amidst these dangerous ghettos of New York and fearlessly caught hold of them and chanted the holy name. Especially when heard from the lips of a pure devotee, this holy name has such power that these people whose consciousness was so covered, deeply covered through so many layers of mode of passion and ignorance, it could pierce and touch their consciousness, their heart, and evoke. And he, what he called them, what Prabhupada called his Westerners, first Western disciples, he said, the dancing white elephants. Now, in the city of Bombay, if an elephant were to come, everyone will watch. Children will go and watch. Hey, hathi aya, hathi aya. Because it's very rare. You may see a car and a bus or something. A plane may come and land in the street. But elephant is very rare. Unless there is some circus in town. So elephant is rare. And elephant comes, kids will come and watch. But big people will say, theek hai, aaya hoga. But if someone says, hey, white elephant has come. Then someone will say, dekhna padega isko. But if someone says, no, a white elephant which is dancing. Abhi to dekhna hi padega. Everyone's eye will come out of their sockets and watch. Hey, white elephant dancing, white elephant. Similarly, it is very difficult to see a Vaishnava. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. It's not easy to see a Vaishnava. A glorious, pure-hearted, pure-consciousness Vaishnava is very rare to see. Out of thousands among men, one may endeavor for perfection. Out of thousands among them, hardly one becomes a Vaishnava, a pure devotee of the Lord. What to speak of a Vaishnava? A white-skinned Vaishnava. Then people will say, acha, dekhna padega, ko nahi. Not that. Not only a Vaishnava, not only a white-skinned, fair German Vaishnava, Russian Vaishnava, American Vaishnava, dancing Vaishnava. This is something, nowadays we have taken it for granted because in ISKCON so many things. But the first time Srila Prabhupada brought these dancing white elephants, it rocked the whole city. People were shocked. What? Germans? Americans? Europeans? Wearing tilak, shave their head with kanthi mala, dhoti kurta, dancing. It was more surprising than if a dancing white elephant were to come and dance in the streets of Bombay. This is the miracle that a pure devotee of the Lord can do. And therefore, we should understand, it doesn't matter whatever level of consciousness we are in, but if we, as Prabhupada says, by able guidance, you know, that particular word that he uses. He says, yeah, the last word he says, in the human form of life, one can conquer the enemy lust by cultivation of Krishna consciousness under able guidance. Now, if an expert mechanic is there, and a new mechanic, first day he has come, he doesn't know anything about vehicle, but if he works under the instruction of an expert mechanic, front portion is called bonnet. Bonnet kholo, khola. Screwdriver pakdo, isko kholo, yes. Aisa ghumao, itna ghumao, ye tight karo. Even the most complicated problem he can repair. But who is doing it? It's actually the expert mechanic doing, and he is simply becoming an instrument in his hands. So that neophyte person can do that job as good as the expert mechanic. Similarly, under the guidance of an expert devotee of the Lord, whose consciousness is completely Krishna conscious. That means, he exactly knows his relationship with the Lord and his relationship with the material world is pure, purified in terms of its original state. When he sees the world from the point, the way Krishna sees the world, that is Krishna consciousness. To see the way Krishna sees the whole world. to use everything for what it is actually meant for. When we work under the guidance of such great personalities, it's only a question of time that we also become purified. And the that's why we say, Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuhu Unmilitam. We see material world and becomes very attractive. But actually when we see through the eyes of scriptures, then we see in it proper perspective. And knowing everything to belong to Krishna, use it in Krishna service. Then we are in Yogamaya. So in conclusion, there are three things. What is consciousness? Anywhere you see consciousness, it is the consciousness of the spirit. Because consciousness is only there in, it's not there in matter, it's only in spirit. But manifested through a gross body or a subtle body is called as material consciousness. And how to become conscious of our consciousness? By studying the different scriptures and understanding the different levels of philosophy of different levels of consciousness, immediately we can understand where we fit in. What is our level of consciousness? What's our understanding of God? What's our understanding of soul? What's our understanding of material nature? And then, to elevate ourselves in consciousness, we have to subordinate ourselves to the instructions and the able guidance of those great personalities who have completely self-realized, who have blossomed, their consciousness has fully blossomed. And then, even in this very lifetime, we can blossom our consciousness to its full and achieve in this very lifetime, at the end of one's life, one can achieve the perfection of becoming an eternally liberated soul, like Narada Muni in his previous life. He was the son of a Dasi. But by following the Bhakti Vedantas, strictly following under there, by hearing and chanting under their instruction, in that very lifetime he became an eternal associate of the Lord. We can also potentially become. So this is the secret. We have to be conscious of our consciousness. Every moment, what we think, what we speak, what we do, we have to be conscious. And that is Krishna consciousness, to be conscious of who we are and why we do what we do. And then, if under the able guidance we do, we can achieve the perfection of life. Which begins by bhakti, which begins by hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Let us thank His Grace Radha Gopinath Prabhu by loudly chanting, Hari Gaur, Hari Gaur, Hari Gaur.